Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie.
Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Christian Sager. Robert, you and I both grew up in the 80s. How worried were you about nuclear annihilation as a kid? Because I was terrified of it. It was like constantly being talked about on the news or in popular culture.
It's an interesting question because, you know, I look back on it and I remember, I think back on threats that were present in the media or in the conversations of adults and how they influenced me. Like I remember going to church and being, and hearing about the coming battle of Armageddon.
Yeah.
And how everyone's going to have to fight on one side or the other. I remember being concerned about that. I remember picking up on some of the AIDS scare material and thinking like, oh, how does this affect me?
Yeah.
How does this affect the people I care about? I don't remember feeling like the anxiety of nuclear war so much. And I was just, you know, part of this was a time when I was living outside of the U.S. I was in Canada. We only had the one TV channel.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, that might have played a role, or maybe I was just, you know, removed enough from distracted enough from the nightly, you know, TV news that it didn't affect me. Or maybe we're about the same age though, so I don't know to what extent that played into it. But in the past, I've kind of wondered, well, maybe I was just a little too young. Like to use the language of Queen, I didn't quite grow up in the shadow of the mushroom cloud, you know?
That's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I also, you know, moved around overseas a little bit too. So that could have contributed to it in different ways as mm-hmm. well. But I definitely remember the 80s being like scary. And then like, you know, maybe it was also just because of my age. But then in the 90s, it was like, oh, things are okay now.
Yes.
Like there's not as much of a threat. We can all breathe easy. We're not going to have to, like, we don't have to do the whole stop, drop, and roll thing in the classrooms, right?
I definitely, looking back, I definitely see that trend where there was the 90s, there was this feeling of, yeah, this is not that big of a threat anymore. Maybe it's even not a threat. Don't worry about it. Just do your thing. But I've always been a fan of stuff from the 80s and the late 70s, from the fiction, the music, some of the literature. And you certainly see nuclear anxiety displayed in that in various ways.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've got, of course, Terminator 2 Judgment Day.
Yeah.
I mean, they are, of course, talking about an artificial intelligence bringing about the apocalypse, but it's through nuclear warfare.
Yeah.
And then the big one that I always think of is Watchmen, especially when I think of what we're going to talk about today, which is the Doomsday Clock. Now, I don't believe this was featured in the movie version of Watchmen, but in the comic book version, every issue began with the Doomsday Clock.
Oh, and yeah, there was, I forgot about
blood
that.
Dripping down the page further and further. And as you got to the 12th issue, I think the blood was covering the clock like all the way or something like that. But the idea was that the reason why these events were happening in the story is because we were inching closer to midnight on the Doomsday Clock.
Huh. Yeah, I, you know, maybe when I first read Watchmen, I wasn't, for some reason, I never really put one and two together on the Doomsday Clock, but there you go.
Yeah, I believe that there's like a kind of synchronicity of the metaphor there with Dr. Manhattan being connected to atomic energy. He's also a watchmaker, and he's obsessed with time and taking apart clocks and putting them back together again. And then the background metaphor of the Doomsday Clock.
Huh.
Now, here's the thing. I didn't know the Doomsday Clock was a real thing until I was an adult. And actually, just recently, it was updated. Now, we shared this on our social media for Stuff to Blow Your Mind, and there was a lot of comments about it. And so much so that we thought, this is probably worth digging into because there's a lot of science behind the Doomsday Clock, and the group that manages it, which is called the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. So we figured, let's do a dive into that, explain what that is, and see what's going on there.
Yeah, because I feel like there is a lot of confusion, especially, and I don't mean to vilify people who say didn't read the link. Didn't follow the link and read the article that we shared, because I think we all have to do this. We're hit with so many different pieces of media in our streams. You just can't click on everything. We understand that. But it's easy without diving into it, it's easy to mistake what the Doomsday Clock is.
Mm-hmm.
On one hand, you might think, oh, well, this is a rigorous scientific, like, Fermi kind of a contemplation on what the chances of nuclear war are. Or you may think, oh, well, this is just complete political BS. This is just somebody or some group of people just making some with political motivation deciding how dangerous the current climate is.
And the answer is it's somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
But it's worth taking a look at because while yes, so let's make this very clear right from the top. The Doomsday Clock is not managed by any kind of like supercomputer or device that's calculating things and figuring out what the exact time on the clock should be.
Yeah, do not confuse it with an actual atomic clock.
Right.
Which is a highly precise, time measurement, system.
Yeah.
This is something where a human hand is essentially going to reach up and change what time it
exactly.
is.
Exactly. And it's fairly subjective, but at the same time, the people who are in charge of making that subjective judgment call are experts in their field. And we're going to go over all of that. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about the group, the journal surrounding this, the Doomsday Clock itself. And then we're going to look at some arguments both for and against it. So just to back up here, in case you missed it, at the beginning of 2017, the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists calculated that we're even closer to doomsday, and they adjusted the doomsday clock to 2.5 minutes to midnight, midnight being doomsday, meaning the human population will be completely wiped out by something, usually nuclear annihilation. And by their prediction, we're that much closer to the end of humanity. This is the closest the clock has been to doomsday since 1953, after the U.S. tested its first thermonuclear device. Now, why did they push it forward?
Well, certainly, if you've been following the news enough to pick up on the doomsday story, then you've probably been following the news enough to pick up on all these various other stories. We can basically reduce a lot of it to sort of to saber rattling, to the testing of new regimes, to new regimes, rolling out their stance on issues of nuclear armaments, warfare in general, and international relations.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, this is going to get a little bit political here, only for the purposes of us describing why they made this decision. So they cited specifically that the global security landscape darkened. This is a direct quote. as the international community failed to come effectively to grips with humanity's most pressing existential threats. And by that, they mean nuclear weapons and climate change. Now, this was announced in an op-ed to the New York Times. There were two people, theoretical physicist Lawrence M. Krauss and retired Navy Rear Admiral David Titley. And they wrote on behalf of the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, and this was their quote. They said, "Making matters worse, the United States now has a president who has promised to impede progress on both of those fronts. Never before has the Bulletin decided to advance the clock largely because of the statements of a single person. But when that person is the new president of the United States, his words matter."
Now, specifically, I believe they're referring to some comments that the president has made regarding the arms race. I think he said something to the effect of, "Let there be an arms race," or, you know, "We'll outproduce the competition in terms of nuclear armaments." And if you've been following the news, you know that the president will say one thing and then he may restate it later.
Yeah.
But this response was coming to some of the spikes in the rhetoric.
Yeah, and this is stuff that he said on the campaign trail before he was elected too. So, mm-hmm. You know, there's a well-documented record of his policy, or at least stated policies, on nuclear armament and on climate change. So these are things that concerned the Bulletin of mm-hmm. Atomic Scientists. And, you know, even since they made this announcement, he's continued to say things to
right.
this effect. Now, I would be remiss if I did not mention the Iron Maiden song 2 Minutes to Midnight.
Because I believe, looking back at the timeline, 2 minutes is as close as we've come.
It is, thankfully. Yeah. And we are currently 2.5 minutes to midnight. Now, there was a listener out there who pointed this out to me, actually. When we posted the original story, he shared the video for Iron Maiden's 2 Minutes to Midnight. And I went, "Oh, of course." And man, this is one of those instances where I wish we could get away with playing music on the show, because that song's pretty great and it's perfect as a theme song for this episode. But go check it out if you're unfamiliar with it and you love metal. And there's all kinds of other popular culture things that would resonate with this. One of my favorite songs that isn't necessarily a big one is the ska band Mephiscopheles has a song called Doomsday that is about this as well.
Oh yeah, I'm not familiar with Mephiscopheles.
They're a silly 1990s ska band.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, I already mentioned that, you know, that I'm a big fan of so many things that came out of the late 70s, the 1980s, early 90s as well. But some of the big ones that, of course, come to people's mind, in addition to all the post nuke fiction out there, War Games, of course.
Oh yeah,
yeah. That's the classic example of the only way to win the game is not to play.
See, this is why I think it had so much impact on me. War Games is the first movie I ever saw on videotape.
Really? Huh.
Yeah, Betamax. My parents rented a Betamax machine when I was a little kid, and the two movies they got for me were War Games and Star Wars, both movies with war in the title.
Well, I think with War Games, like, this probably didn't have that big of an impact on me personally, because I don't think I may have never seen it in its entirety. I think it's one of those films that I just later saw parts of on TV
got
the general, you know, gist of it. But it never had the opportunity to really get its hooks into me like it did for other people.
Yeah, I mean, as I've said on the show before, I watched a lot of stuff when I was 5 years old that I probably shouldn't have. Mm-hmm. This was one of them. 1983, that was right when I was 5 years old. I saw War Games. I also watched The Shining when I was 5 years old. So, you know, maybe that explains a lot.
Well, you know, I think War Games, I think, makes sense for some younger viewers. But we, in a previous episode, the Butter episode, we talked about the Butter Battle book. Seuss book and subsequent Turner TV special that deals with the arms race and deals with the idea of mutually assured destruction. So really, no matter what your age was during this era, there was the potential to be introduced to the larger cultural anxiety regarding this.
Yeah. It was a period that was rife with popular culture surrounded by this. And now that we're inching closer to midnight on the doomsday clock, I kind of wonder if we're going to see more stuff like this again. Time will tell. Now, you're probably wondering, who are the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, or what is this thing? Well, the Bulletin was actually founded by some of the people who worked on the Manhattan Project. These were people who felt that they could not remain aloof to the consequences of their work creating atomic weapons. And they were the people who built the atomic bomb, but then they also lobbied for its abolition. Now, today, it's a nonprofit organization, and it has an international board of experts who assess scientific advancements and the benefits and risks that they give to humanity. Now, their stated goal is to influence public policy. So let's be very clear here. Like, they state, and they say very plainly on all their literature, like, yes, this is our goal, is to communicate and to change policy. They describe the Bulletin as such. They say it's like a doctor making a diagnosis by looking at data, considering symptoms, measurements, and circumstances, and then coming up with a judgment on how to treat a condition.
And I do have to throw in here that I don't think anyone out there sane in the world is arguing that nuclear war is a desired outcome.
Right.
Or, you know, even, you know, we mentioned some of the comments that the president has made. And, you know, when pressed on the matter, he has said, oh, well, nuclear weapons are horrible. You know, this is, you know, bad, not good.
Yeah, he very specifically uses the term, these are bad things.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I don't think anybody is arguing that, yeah, let's have a nuclear war. That sounds like a great idea. The arguments come into the balance and how do you reduce, et cetera. And then into the political, situations that increase the likelihood of one of these weapons being used, because really we've been very lucky in the regard that there have only been two military uses of nuclear weapons, and of course they were both deployed by the United States at the close of the Second World War in Japan. Outside of that, we've had plenty of tests. We have had some testy situations regarding their positioning and their potential use, but we have not had to suffer any subsequent uses, and we haven't had to see actual nuclear warfare warfare between two nuclear armed nations.
Right. Yeah. The idea here being that the buildup of these armaments will be a deterrent to various powers to either in the course of their militaristic actions or in their own armament of nuclear weapons, right? And it's not just the United States and Russia anymore, and we'll get into that. There's all kinds of factors that come into play. Now, the Bulletin is also an award-winning journal, and it puts issues and events into context and provides fact-based debates and assessments about, you know, the basically the end of humanity. And they have been around for 70 years. There's lots of other reports and analysis on their site. Their site is pretty fantastic in terms of like layout and all the contents available, and infographics too. Their infographics are really good. Mm-hmm. But there's also a bi-monthly magazine. Now today, we're talking about, in terms of like the people who make the decision about the doomsday clock, we're talking about 10 to 20 people who literally sit in a room for a day and do the best they can to communicate disaster to the rest of us. Now, it's either once or twice a year, the board's members get together and they gather for a one-day discussion where they review what worried them the following year and what they anticipate as new concerns. They don't use devices or computers to calculate this. This is just experienced expert adults trying to come to a consensus.
Yeah, there's no algorithm that is deployed here.
Exactly. So you may be wondering, well, who are these people? What are they so expert at? And this is, you know, maybe going to be a little dry, but I want to go through the list of the current people so you have an idea of who's making this decision. Now, the current membership of the board, it is the Science and Security Board for the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. And they're said to also consult widely with their colleagues across a wide variety of disciplines before they get together to make decisions about the doomsday clock. So let's go through these here. Okay, so the first is Lynn Eden. She's one of the co-chairs, and she's a research scholar at Stanford University who studies military and society, science, technology, and organizations, as well as nuclear weapons history and policy.
Up next, we have Robert Rosner, co-chair, professor of astronomy, astrophysics, and physics at the University of Chicago.
There's Rod Ewing. He's a professor of nuclear security and earth sciences at Stanford University.
Then there's Stephen Kartha, senior scientist at Stockholm Environmental Institute, focuses on technological and policy options for addressing climate change.
There's Herb Lin. This is a senior research scholar for cyber policy and security at Stanford University. You're seeing a trend here. There's a lot of people from Stanford there.
Next is Suzette McKinney, former deputy commissioner of the Bureau of Public Health, Preparedness, and Emergency Response at the Chicago Department of Public Health. She's an expert in emergency preparedness efforts.
Steve Miller is the director of the International Security Program at Harvard University.
Up next, we have Raymond T. Pierre-Humbert. This is professor of physics at the University of Oxford, specializes in how climate works.
Ramamurthy Rajaraman, he's a professor of physics at Jawaharlal Nehru University.
Up next, we have Jennifer Sims. She's senior fellow at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs and a consultant on intelligence and homeland security.
Susan Solomon is a professor of environmental studies at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. She's actually one of the pioneers in the work that explains why there's a hole in the Antarctic ozone layer, and she specifically specializes in climate science.
Up next, we have Richard Somerville, professor of oceanography at the University of California, and his focus is climate systems.
Sharon Squassani, she's the director of the Proliferation Prevention Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies at Washington, D.C. She specializes in nuclear nonproliferation, arms control, and security policy.
And then we have David Titley, professor of meteorology and international affairs at Pennsylvania State University, a former naval officer with the rank of Rear Admiral who used to work in the Pentagon.
Okay, so we've gone through that list. That is clearly a list of people who have a lot of credentials under their belt, right? It does not seem like a list of, I mean, I think we've got like a little over 10 people. There's probably like 12 or 13 of them here. They're not just whimsically going to say something like, we're 2 minutes away from the world ending, right? It
right.
seems like, yeah, maybe they have rhetorical agendas, but they are all experts in fields like, nuclear nonproliferation, military, climate change, and a growing thing that they're looking at is cybersecurity.
Right. And then, yeah, there's not a single celebrity or, you know,
yeah,
or
Angelina
CEO
Jolie isn't on the doomsday yeah. clock committee. Okay. Let's take a break. And when we get back, let's really dive into what the doomsday clock actually is.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. All right, we're back. So everyone has probably seen a picture of the Doomsday Clock thus far. If nothing else, it should be the lead art for this episode on the website, stufftoblowyourmind.com. But beyond that, beyond just what it looks like, what is the Doomsday Clock?
Okay, so it was originally founded by, as I mentioned before, people who were involved with the Manhattan Project. And one of the Bulletin's members was a nuclear physicist named Alexander Langsdorff. And his wife, Martle, she was an artist. And when they were coming up with this journal for the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, she created a clock symbol. And she set it to 11:53 for the cover of the group's magazine. Now, she did this, she said, because, quote, it looked good to her eye. So there was no reasoning behind why it was at 11:53 on the very first issue.
It's just more like, yeah, this feels about right.
Exactly. Yeah. In 1949, however, her husband reset it 4 minutes later. Since then, this group has been around for 70 years, and they've used the clock to draw attention to worldwide crises that they believe threaten the survival of the human species. And their focus is almost entirely on the availability of nuclear weapons and the world powers that are willing to use them. So they describe it as such. They say it's a symbol, obviously, but it's a symbolic intersection of art and science. And its goal is to get people to talk more about nuclear weapons. Basically, you know, I think it's easy to say this now, like, especially since, like, what we were saying with the 90s, it kind of was like, oh, the Cold War is over. Whew. Don't have to worry about that being a day-to-day concern.
I think the clock itself went to something like 17 minutes
out.
It did. Yeah,
yeah. 1991 was the most optimistic position it ever was at, and it was 17 minutes to midnight. Now, the clock itself has wavered between that 17 minutes and 2 minutes. Since its inception in 1947, the time itself, like we described, is determined by this board of scientists and nuclear experts who meet regularly. But ultimately, yes, this is a political tool for communication. But here's the thing. It works. The last few times they've announced a change to the clock, it has been not only international news in that it's made, you know, headlines in every major news outlet, but it is also trended on Facebook and Twitter. So people talk about it. It works. It gets people to think about what's going on with nuclear weapons. Now, the hand itself has been reset 22 times. It used to be that the bulletin's editor decided when the hand should be moved, and his name was Eugene Rabinovich, and he was a scientist. But when he died in 1973, that Science and Security Board that Robert and I just went through with you, they took over. And like I said, they meet twice a year to discuss world events relating to the clock. Now, the last time it was moved before this most recent one was in 2015. 2 minutes were taken away to express the bulletin's dissatisfaction with world progress on climate change and nuclear weapons. So they have four criteria that they currently use to determine the status of the clock. The first is obviously the possibility of major conflict between nuclear states. Then there is, and this is relatively new, out of control climate change. The third is risks of civilian nuclear powered disaster, especially when it relates to waste storage.
Okay, this tying in, of course, to accidents such as that at Chernobyl and Three Mile Island.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then the fourth and final one is they're looking at emerging technologies like genetically modified pandemics or destructive artificial intelligence. So ultimately, their focus here is about any kind of species-wide catastrophe, no matter what its origin might be. Now, on their site, they have this thing that's called the Doomsday Dashboard. That I have to say, like, I think that there's like a certain amount of cheekiness to this too, right? Like, maybe that's just me, but I like the idea of like the Doomsday Dashboard, you know, it's just kind of, it feels jokey, but at the same time, it's obviously the most serious you can be about a possible topic.
Right. I mean, they're simplifying all of this into this one simple. And in doing that, there, you know, there's the value of some of simplistic and direct communication via symbolism. But in doing so, I mean, they are realizing that they're boiling it down.
Yeah. So this dashboard is a little different from the clock in that it accounts for the amount of global nuclear weapons, the security of nuclear materials around the world, the amount of nuclear materials that are stored, the rise in the sea level, and the rise in atmospheric carbon dioxide, as well as the difference in global temperatures and the minimum amount of Arctic sea ice that we currently have. So it's this big interface that shows you all those things.
Basically, keeping track of all of the modern woes, especially that came out of Pandora's box,
right,
and kind of and cared for, or at least you know, by an organization that it was at least founded by individuals who arguably played
they
a role in opening
that box
to begin with.
So the thing here basically is they study events and trends, they track numbers and statistics, they also account for world leaders and citizen efforts to reduce these potential dangers. They also recognize that nuclear energy and climate change are intertwined. So they say, well, yeah, of course, some people advocate for nuclear power to reduce carbon dioxide emissions. So they recognize that there's kind of like a give and take there, and they need to pay attention to that. So why are we currently at 2.5 minutes to midnight? Well, we gave you their stated answer, you know, in their op-ed piece earlier. But here's a couple of listed items, basically bullet items that are of concern to them, and I would imagine to all of us. So the United States and Russia together possess more than 90% of the world's nuclear weapons, and we remain at odds in a variety of theaters. Now, obviously, the U.S. and Russia aren't facing off one-to-one, but examples include Syria, the Ukraine, and the borders of NATO. There's also, you know, both of these countries continuing to modernize their forces with little arms control negotiations. So as of this recording, what was it, last week, President Trump announced that he was going to increase a massive amount of spending to the defense budget. So, you know, that's in line with this. Now, North Korea is another factor. They continue to conduct underground nuclear tests. They're giving indications that it would keep trying to develop a nuclear weapon, one that has delivery capabilities. So we're talking about ICBMs here, I believe. Pakistan and India continue to threaten each other with nuclear warfare. Now they're facing off over the line of control in Kashmir. Now, the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists also adds that climate change's outlook looks somewhat less dismal than it used to, but only somewhat, they say. That's a direct quote. So 2016, warmest year on record, and 16 of the 17 warmest years on record have been recorded since 2001. So that's of concern to them. They say climate change is a risk to human health and has adverse effects on our food availability. They also include within all of this the rise of nationalism worldwide, as well as both President Trump and Vladimir Putin's comments about the use and proliferation of nuclear weapons, as well as President Trump's disbelief in the scientific consensus on climate change. In fact, the U.S. is scheduled to spend between $100 billion and $1 trillion on retrofitting nuclear weapons for another four decades of service. I was just watching The Expanse. The show that we've talked about on Stuff to Blow Your Mind many times. They fire a bunch of nuclear missiles into outer space at one point.
Oh, yeah, and I believe that is supposed to represent the, if not the entirety, then at least the vast majority of Earth's nuclear arsenal is launched in that scenario.
Yeah, it really made me think on this. Okay, so the bulletin also see, you know, Trump's rhetoric as a disregard for scientific expertise, and they say, look, this is a growing problem. Here's some additional factors as well. They say the Russian cyber attack on the United States political system, the gene editing tool CRISPR, so we've talked about this on this show or in other How Stuff Works media. Basically, the idea here is that CRISPR could possibly make it easier to produce biological weapons. And then they also listed the rise of, quote, fake news. Now, when they probably released this thing, they weren't as sick of the term fake news as the rest of us.
Yeah.
And honestly, me personally, I'd prefer to use other terms like disinformation. But
yeah, the term has become muddier since we first talked about it in our episode, Is Social Media Driving Me Crazy?
Oh, yeah.
Because it's kind of been... It's kind of been co-opted. So now it is it's an insult that is leveled at reputable news sources, as well as intentionally confusing or inaccurate reports.
Yeah. So some of you are probably listening and you're going, wow, this is really heavily weighted on the climate change thing. I'm not necessarily a believer in that. Or maybe you are. But what does it have to do, you know, with nuclear annihilation? Here's where I kind of fall on this thing, which is that even outside of scientific reason, I've always thought about climate change as being similar to Pascal's wager. You know that, Robert? Pascal's wager?
Mm-hmm.
Basically on the belief of God. And the idea is, you know, that as a rational person, I think if climate change does exist and we fight to stop it, well, we're going to experience more gains and less loss, right? But it's a probability gamble. However, I, as a science communicator, do believe in the science behind climate change. Don't get me wrong. But so to me, it's like it's similar to the belief in God, and that it's not about science or religion as much as like you got to think of it as like a rewards and risks game.
Yeah.
Right. And hey, you know what? If I take out my recycling and I'm a little bit better about my carbon footprint, and it's a little bit of a strain on my lifestyle. Sorry. You know what? I'd rather do that than boil alive.
Yeah. And, you know, and just to drive home the important thing here, too, there is a scientific consensus that,
yes,
that climate
absolutely.
Change is occurring and that humans are a major factor, if not the major factor in it spinning out of control. Now, I'm sure those of you out there who have your doubts. I'm sure you have an expert or two whose opinions you turn to. I'm sure you have a list of pre-prepared problems with climate change. But you really can't argue with the fact that this is the scientific consensus. And if you were going to, if you're going to work outside of scientific consensus, then that is ultimately an illogical choice.
Yeah. And so look, like, the reason why I'm addressing this here is I know that this is contentious. I know that we have some listeners who are probably going to write us in about this and say, I can't believe that you guys sided with this group that believes in climate change, right? And I know for a fact that when this episode goes up on Facebook, that there will be dozens of comments probably about how this is all a scam. But look, we have to address it. That's what I believe. This is where we are at with scientific consensus. This is a show about how science is used in our world. And the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists is a group of experts.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, you have to, what am I going to side with if it's not scientific consensus? Am I going to side with political consensus? Am I going to side with religious consensus? I really haven't seen much in the way of, I've seen religious arguments for combating climate change, but I haven't seen much in the way of religious arguments that human created climate change is not occurring. So I don't really think I even have an option in that direction if I chose to go that way.
Yeah, exactly. So and again, we're going to get back into this again in a later section, because there is a strong argument against the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists that we'll relate to you later. I just wanted to set that up as we were talking about the climate change stuff. Now, historical events have edged us this close to the doomsday midnight before. In fact, in 1949, when the Soviet Union tested an atomic bomb and the nuclear arms race began, that was one time. Then also in 1984, when American-Soviet relations deteriorated and deployed short-range missiles around Europe. And that's, again, right around prime time for you and me as little kids. Mm-hmm. And in 1952, when they both tested thermonuclear hydrogen bombs. That's the only time it's ever been closer to midnight than right now. So here's some nightmare scenarios that they pitch the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists that could edge us even further. One is a NATO war with Russia.
Yeah, that would be horrible.
Two is an American conflict with China.
That would be horrible, yeah.
Three is an erratic launch by North Korea, meaning their nuclear missiles. And it was like 2 or 3 days ago, wasn't it? They do this all the time. North Korea, like, erratically has some missile fly off into the ocean.
Well, you can say erratic, but also my understanding is that there are certain military operations that go on every year with the U.S. and South Korea, and they always do something to sort of speak out and to protest these events. And this is the latest version of this. Yeah.
In fact, I think I read this morning on my way into work something about, you know, China basically said, like, hey, North Korea, cool your jets. United States and South Korea, can you kind of slow your roll with the military operations? You know, they're trying to be the logical ones in this. Well, at least on the face of it. All right. And another horrible scenario they predict is a war between India and Pakistan. And the final one would be if ISIS was somehow nuclear enabled. So all of these are things that they see as complete nightmare scenarios that could, you know, push us even closer to midnight. The bulletin themselves also called upon Trump and Putin to use their, quote, friendly relationship to reduce nuclear weapon stocks. So I thought that was kind of funny, actually. I mean, given all this, you know, we joke about it. SNL is always doing some kind of gag one way or the other about Trump and Putin. But, you know.
Yeah. I mean, to take a step back from all of it, it is a bit ridiculous that we're in this scenario where there's so much talk about these two governmental heads being in collusion with each other, and yet the arms race rhetoric has increased.
Yeah, it's ramping.
You'd think that we'd at least get the side effect of calmer nuclear relations, but
we can only hope.
Thus, this is the world we live in.
Okay, let's take another break, and when we get back, we're going to introduce these arguments about whether or not we should believe in the doomsday clock or not.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road, the steeper the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, we're back. So you're scrolling through your Facebook feed, and you make out the unmistakable symbol of the doomsday clock. Should you click on it? Should you not click on it? Should you give it a thumbs up or a smiley? Should you give it the frowny face, the angry face, or just the sad face? How should we react to it?
So we've already presented to you how they come about their decision making of where the hands on this clock reside, right? And you can, judge for yourself whether or not you think that's logical. But there is an argument against it presented by a guy named Tom Nichols. He is a professor of national security affairs at the U.S. Naval War College. And he says that, yes, the bulletin was right to remind us of the problems with nuclear weapons during the Cold War. He says, look, this is a great and venerable journal, even though I don't necessarily agree with their politics. But he argues that the world today is much safer. And so he dismisses the addition of climate change to the doomsday clock, and he calls it notional. He says that scientists involved in this are catering to a liberal audience and that they have concerns such as, quote, being mean to each other. So he says the clock itself means nothing. He compares where the clock was set to historical events, and he argues that we're safer now than we were in 1991, and that's when the clock was set at its best. So this is his argument. He also says the clock is, quote, simply theater, and that it's designed to create a sense of urgent worry about these things that the scientists think we need to worry about. On this, I'm not going to argue with him. I'm sure the Bulletin would, too. They're pretty clear about saying, like, yes, this is a communication propaganda tool for us to get people to start talking about these problems.
And it's also, yeah, worth pointing out that even when the clock was at its best, you still have nuclear states, and there's a perceivable path to a potential nuclear conflict or a nuclear detonation that's always there just by virtue of having armed states.
Yeah.
This would be content for a later episode, but I was reading recently about computing errors that have occurred here and there regarding the systems that manage the nuclear armaments on both sides.
Yep.
And that alone is terrifying. Yeah.
Yeah. I left some of those notes out, but that's absolutely true that there have been computing errors that basically said, oh, somebody just launched a bunch of missiles at us, and it was only because there was a human being there who was able to recognize that there was a malfunction and say, no, that's not actually happening. Do not retaliate.
Yeah, at all points, the technology is fallible and the humans involved are fallible.
Yep.
And you just got to hope and pray that they're not both fallible at the same time, because that's when the clock starts moving again.
But Nichols' argument is that scientists since the end of World War II have been trying to figure out how to translate their intelligence in things like chemistry and physics and earth sciences into political power. So he's basically saying that they're trying things like the doomsday clock are an attempt as a power grab by science. He argues that there are good reasons for leaders to reject scientific advice. And this is his direct quote. It's easy to be a fan of scientists running things as long as your own guys doing the sciencing. But scientists can be wrong about politics in all kinds of ways. And then it all comes down to this. He has a particular bone to pick with Leon Cooper, who is a person that's involved with the Bulletin. I think he used to be on the security membership team. And the two of them apparently had a nasty debate with each other at Brown University. So he wants the Bulletin to change the clock back to being only about nuclear danger, and that they should take out climate change, artificial intelligence, and, you know, genetic modification. Mm-hmm. Either that, or he says they should just retire it in general. Now, I would like to point something out here. The article in which he wrote this was published in January of 2016. And within it, even then, he said, God help us if Donald Trump is elected and controls our nuclear trigger. So he may, we don't have Nichols here in the room with us, but he may have a little bit of a different answer today because of, you know, how they've adjusted the clock. And whether or not climate change is on the board, certainly we've edged a little bit closer in terms of nuclear armament. So this is my counter argument on this.
Okay.
Because he says things like, oh, well, they're concerned about things like being mean to each other. Well, you know, Joe and I just did this two-part episode where we talked about animal intelligence and we compared it to humanity. And I'm far more concerned right now about humanity's recent lack of empathy and how that's going to contribute to our moral decision-making progress. You tie that into technologies of death like nuclear weapons or genetic modification or artificial intelligence, all these things that the Bulletin lists above. I'm not so dismissive of those things.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. All of these aspects of humanity are interconnected. Our technology, the way we view each other, the way we treat each other, the politics, the science, and I think it it's counterproductive to want to just say, like, you know, to fall back on some of the arguments here presented by Nichols, the idea that we should only look at this in a political sphere, or that scientists are saying they only want to run things from a scientific perspective. These are all interconnected. There's no avoiding that.
Yeah. And the bulletin themselves address this by saying, you know, sometimes they're asked, they even have this on their FAQ page, what's worse, nuclear energy or climate change? And their quote is, at the end of the day, trying to answer the question is like standing around in a burning house arguing about whether it's better to die of smoke inhalation or from a falling timber. And that kind of gets back to my Pascal's wager thing, is that it's like, well, you know, it's a cost benefit, rewards risks thing. So, now, the bulletin themselves, they don't, as far as I could find, they didn't, counter-argue Nichols. But they do have an argument in favor of why climate change is included in the doomsday clock. And this is written by Dawn Stover, and it's available on their site. She says, John Cook, who's a research fellow on climate communication at the University of Queensland's Global Change Institute, said, quote, our planet has been building up heat at the rate of about 4 Hiroshima bombs every second. Consider that going continuously for several decades. Then this was reformulated by a climate scientist, James Hansen, who is a member of the Science and Security Board. And in 2012, Hansen said that climate change, its excess energy buildup in the Earth's ocean and other heat reservoirs, was equivalent to exploding 400,000 Hiroshima atomic bombs per day, 365 days per year. Now, that sounds crazy, right? Like, we all go, come on now. Like, this just even like I can go, all right, maybe I see where Nichols is at with, like, thinking that this is purely rhetorical. But Dawn Stover does a really good job in this article of breaking down why these are important arguments.
Because, yeah, on the surface of things, I hear those stats and I think, well, you're talking about, like, global heat increases versus the very localized heat output of a nuclear detonation.
Yeah.
It's kind of disingenuous to compare those two things.
Yeah, exactly. But Stover says, okay, is this comparison accurate? Well, she says Hansen comparing the explosive yield and not instant massive death of a bomb yield, well, that's measured in kilotons of TNT. You can take that and you can convert it into an equivalent number of calories for direct comparison with the Earth's rising heat content. The problem that Hansen argues is that greenhouse gases reduce the amount of Earth's heat radiation that's going out into space. So there's a temporary energy imbalance here on the planet, and they've done the math figuring out that that totals 2.6 watts per square meter of Earth's surface. Now, Anthony Watts dismissed this excess energy. This is another person who argued against this and said, look, that's hardly a blip. It only has the power of 1/100th of a 60-watt light bulb, and that's true. But then Stover points out the numbers are still right when you consider the cumulative imbalance over time. So their example is if you lived in a house and it had a 0.6 watt per square meter of heat energy that never left the building, it would raise the heat by 4.5 degrees per day, eventually boiling you to death in under a month.
That's a pretty big Twinkie. The main thing that's
yes, it is, Dr. Venkman. Yeah. Now, Stover says, is the comparison effective? Well, Cook argues that his pronouncement was effective since it made headlines around the world, meaning, again, look, this is a communications device.
Right.
Since misinformation about climate change are what he calls sticky ideas, Cook wanted to fight them with stickier ideas. Rather than speaking in complex, abstract, dry language, he wanted to advocate for simple, concrete, and basically emotional rhetoric. But that was also credible. So
okay,
the math's there, but he also wanted to sort of condense it into something that was, I guess, as we say, in terms of social media, would go viral.
Yeah. So the idea being here that if you have anti-climate change statements that have, to invoke Stephen Colbert's terminology, truthiness to them. Like they feel like they're accurate, and therefore people cling to them. He's trying to create things that both feel truthy and are truth.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, I think that's his goal here. And then finally, Stover says, well, is the comparison itself appropriate? And she argues, yes, it is. Climate change is a man-made phenomenon that is also catastrophic. And she says the atom bomb is a man-made phenomenon that is catastrophic. The goal of the bulletin is to spur people to action, and it seems to be working. Also, she says climate change does cause mass death by increasing the frequency of extreme weather events like heat waves and floods, while creating conditions that make it easier for disease to thrive and crops to fail. In fact, it is already estimated that climate change kills 400,000 people annually in that respect. So I didn't see how she broke those numbers down, but I'm guessing what she means is that cumulatively heat waves, floods, increases in disease, and I would imagine starvation due to crop failure amounts to that many deaths per year. So, all right. Robert and I are going to leave it up to you, audience. We're not going to tell you one way what to think or the other about the doomsday clock, but we've broken it down for you now. You know what the doomsday clock is. You know who the people are behind it. You know how they calculate what it is. Are we 2.5 minutes to midnight? How's Iron Maiden's song sounding to us now?
I mean, in the end here, regardless of how you think about it, the clock is achieving its purpose, getting people to discuss it, to tease apart the issue, ask themselves, is what's going on in the world today making us safer? Do we feel safer? And how concerned should we be about nuclear weapons, about climate change, and about some of these emerging threats that we discussed? Some of the, in a ways, more sci-fi threats, but threats that are still part of this this human invention, things that we've introduced into the world by opening the technological Pandora's box, if you will.
Yeah. Speaking of sci-fi threats, I saw this shirt when I was on the airplane on the way to Seattle last week that made me think of all of this. And I did not realize it, but it is a quote from Aliens.
Ah.
So I went and looked it up. This guy on the airplane that I was on, he was wearing a T-shirt that said, "Namaste, peace through superior firepower." And the image was somebody meditating in a lotus position, but the person was made up of two machine guns pointing upward. And so, you know, apparently this is a slogan that one of the soldiers, I believe it's Frost in Aliens, has emblazoned on their uniform.
Oh, wait, which character is Frost? You're going to have to remind me of that.
I think Frost is... is Frost the other guy with the giant machine gun that's not Vasquez?
Okay, that one. All right.
The, like, Gatling gun thing?
Okay.
Maybe I'm wrong. Aliens fans out there are probably screaming at us through the podcast headphones. But anyways, so it came from that. But then, you know, this is a shirt that this guy was wearing basically saying, advocating for the same, you know, nuclear proliferation idea here, that it's a deterrence. If we have superior firepower, then that will create peace because no one will want to attack us, right? I don't know if I agree with that. And I'm an Aliens fan.
Well, you know, that shirt design reminds me of the cover art for a P.J. O'Rourke book that came out in 1992 called Give War a Chance. And the cover art was the peace symbol, but the center of the peace symbol was a B-52 bomber.
Yeah.
It's I feel like, but in both of these cases, the symbol, the simplification of the message, which lines up with the symbolic simplification of the doomsday clock. I mean, these raise questions about how are we to think about nuclear arms? How are we to think about limiting and decreasing the number of nuclear weapons out there? Because everything is interconnected. It's a Jenga game of humanity's survival. And you can say nuclear weapons are bad, but you can't just pull out the Jenga block for one nation's weapons and expect that to at all be a reasonable response unless everybody else is coordinating their movements as well.
And that's why we're
seeing tricky scenario.
Similar buildups in other countries, right? Like first it was the US and Russia, then it was India and Pakistan, now it's North Korea and South Korea. Like we're going to keep seeing this kind of buildup all around the world if that's going to be the logic that we use for trying to keep peace.
Yeah, I mean, because ultimately there's a special table you get to sit at if you have access to these weapons. It gives you a certain amount of power and a certain voice that you didn't have previously.
Yeah. And my argument would be, even if I did believe in peace through superior firepower, based on what we were talking about earlier, if there's either human miscalculation or technological miscalculation, having that much firepower possibly go wrong, it's not worth it to me.
Yeah. And in Aliens, it goes pretty wrong.
It does indeed. Yeah, it does indeed. Although I guess we have to blame the engineers for that, or we'll find out in Alien Covenant in a couple months. So if you're concerned about this, if you heard this episode and you've got the doomsday clock fear, the bulletin says there's three things that you can do. The first is you can learn as much as you can about the powerful technology that can destroy our way of life. Yay, that sounds like a fun homework assignment. Then you can share what you've learned, either tell people in real life or put it on social media or something. And then they say the third thing is tell your government representatives what your concerns are. So that's the doomsday clock. That's the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. Let us know, do you believe this whole climate change is as bad as nuclear war thing? Should climate change be included in the Doomsday Clock's calculations? And are we really 2.5 minutes close to midnight, or where would you estimate us on the clock?
Yeah, I'd also love to hear from listeners both younger and older than us with their personal take on what it was like to grow up in the shadow of the mushroom cloud. Some of our older audience members may have memories even from before the advent of nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
And our younger – we have listeners out there who came out of the 90s or even later, terrifyingly enough. So I'd be interested to hear what have you grown up in? What is the environment been? What has the media been telling you? What have you been picking up from adults in your life as well as all of the various media you consume regarding these threats to our way of life?
Yeah. Should we be panicking? All the ways that you can get in touch with us, man, there are so many social media channels these days. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram. And you should visit stufftoblowyourmind.com. Man, that is a good website.
Yeah, I'm partial to it. That's where you'll find all the episodes of this podcast, as well as blog posts, videos, and links out to those social media accounts that we mentioned earlier.
And then if you just want to write us directly, you can always find us at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.